Remember me, though I have to say goodbye. Remember me, don't let it make you cry. Forever if I'm far away, hold you in my heart. I sing a secret song to you each night we are apart. Remember me, I have to travel far. Remember me, each time you hear a sad guitar, know that I'm with you. The only way I can be. Until you're in my arms again. Dear God. So that was the theme song from the hit America One movie, Pixar movie, animated classic, Coco. And the tears you heard, the cracking in my voice you heard, was 100% real, because that song is one of the sweetest, most poignant tearjerker songs, I can't even talk about it without crying, that has ever been written. And I can't even, all these years later, I cannot sing it without crying. I cannot hear the guitar notes of it without crying. And it's actually a fun game that you can play, which is how far you sing, no matter if you're a good singer or a bad singer, you sing the theme song to Coco and see how far you can get. And when I say sing, I mean sincerely sing in the sweetest, sweet, sweet voice that you can muster. And how far can you get into the lyrics of the song without, before you start crying? I think I made it, what did I make it? I basically made it 8 words in before I started crying. I kept going just so we could hear the whole song. But seriously, I want you to the nobodies that are, the no ones out there that are listening to this, I just wish everyone in America right now, all these years later, would play this game, which is try to see how far you can get in the song from Coco, Remember Me, without crying. Now, if you can make it through the whole song without your voice cracking, without getting choked up, without a little bit of a tear coming out of the side of your eye, if you can make it all the way through, you can up the ante. You can take it to another round, a higher level. And that is, you sing the song Remember Me from the film Coco. You sing it sincerely, just as before, sweetly as possible, sincerely. But you have to sing it to a small child or a very old person. And at that point, you see how far you can get through the song. I wouldn't even, if there was a small child or an old person here, I wouldn't have even been able to get one word out. It would have been like, wee. It is, oh my God. I don't know if there, I, that movie made me sob. And it's to the point now where, you know, there's another movie that was like that, that is like that for me. And that's the movie Lion. Where I think it's Dev Patel. He plays this, it's a true story about a little kid who gets lost on a train in India, thousands of miles away from his home, and grows up not knowing. I can't even talk about that movie without starting to get choked up. That movie is, I mean, I watched it on an airplane, and it's been scientifically proven that on airplanes, you're more prone to crying. For some reason, like the air is thinner, and so you're like more emotional. I don't know the physiology of that, but I didn't know how sad that movie was going to be or touching. And I'm not joking. I wept through the entire film from the very first scene to the very last. I mean, and you know, if you've seen that movie, the credits are sad because they show real footage of the real characters meeting each. I mean, it's unbelievable how sad that movie is and how heartbreaking and wonderful and magical that movie is. I literally am choked up just thinking about it right now. So those are two movies, Coco and Lion, where it is really hard for me to even discuss it without getting tears in my eyes. That song, of course, reminds me of a really happy moment, which was the 2018 Oscars, the Academy Awards, when Coco won Best Animated Film and Best Song, which it rightly deserved. I remember that year because of a couple things. One, people I actually knew were nominated for awards, which was really exciting. Kumail Nanjiani and Emily Gordon were nominated for Best Original Screenplay for The Big Sick. And though we're not close friends, we've known each other. We had known each other for a long time. And so it was just really exciting to see someone you knew in that world. And also Jordan Peele being nominated. Now, I never knew him personally, but it was just really exciting to see comedians, my peers, getting nominated, going to the big show. You know, there's nothing bigger than the Academy Awards. That was also the year that Frances McDormand got up and gave a really memorable speech. Borderline nutty. It was a little nutty. She has this laugh that is, we just knew, I mean, the moment she got up there, that she was going to go off course. And she did. She was like, she put her Oscar down on the floor and was like, I have some things to say. And then she started sort of maniacally laughing, like, ha 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 ha. Like, it was real crazy. But she did make some really powerful, she made all the women nominees in all the categories stand up. She was like, Meryl Streep, you stand up too, even though Meryl Streep wasn't nominated for anything. You stand up too. And then she, at the end, you know, she kind of shouted out women and making women's projects, all things that I was very passionate about. And then she, at the end, she goes, I'm going to end with two words. Inclusion writer. Not writer. Writer. Inclusion writer. And everyone was like, what the hell is that? And you're Googling it and you can't, no results came up if you Googled it. Of course, then, you know, we all found out what it was, which I knew what it was because I was on the inside. I was a Hollywood elite. Inclusion writer is when an A-list actor or talent of some kind, like maybe an A-list director could do this as well. Whoever would be the top name on a project stipulates that in their contract that a certain amount of people in the production, both on camera and behind the scenes, both in leadership positions and in lower level positions, that they fit a certain level of diversity. And now that would, you know, maybe use the word, which some people really don't like this word, but quota, you know, that, okay, 40% of the cast is not white, 50% is women, you know, 10% is LGBTQ, you know, and it was actually, some of those breakdowns are based on actually what the population of our society would be, so that the production and the cast reflect what our society would be, which that's a really badass, in my opinion, thing to demand. And it's ballsy, you know, that's risky. You go in there, let's say you're Angelina Jolie or you're somebody really famous like that. And you're like, okay, I will do this movie, but you have to make sure that everybody it's a diverse production. And I bet there's some people who get, and if they don't do it, they have to pay the actress a certain amount of money, which I feel like that loophole might be dangerous. But it's a way for, especially white women, I think, in Hollywood, and white men too. It was a way for white men and women in positions of power and privilege to use their power to forward a better representation. Because in Hollywood, especially, there was just such piss poor representation across the board. And a lot of it, you know, the many, many conversations we used to have amongst my comedian friends on why that was. And, you know, you could see it playing out before you. Mentorship was a huge thing, or friends giving friends jobs. And you're usually friends with people that look like you. So anyway, I've talked about that kind of stuff before on here. But anyway, she said inclusion writer, which I decided to avoid Twitter the Twitter conversations surrounding the term inclusion writer, because what I really didn't feel like doing at that time was getting into an argument with an alt-right guy about affirmative action. Not in the mood. But anyway, I thought Frances McDormand was always a badass. You know, she always shows up in whatever dress she wants, but then she has no makeup on, her hair, she looks like she just rolled out of a maybe a state fair pig show. Not that she's a pig, but that she was showing pigs at the state fair. Although I will say I've been to a state fair, and the women usually do their hair pretty nice for that. So actually I wouldn't say that she came from a state fair. Maybe she came from a pig farm, just on a weekday. All the power to her. All the power to her to look how she chooses to look and to get up there and say what the fuck she wants to say. Another thing around the conversation I noticed around the Oscars every year back in America One, and especially towards the end of America One, was that, conservative voices would always bitch and moan leading up to the Oscars. I don't want to watch it. I don't want to hear Hollywood preach to me about how great they are. Oh, they're going to wear a certain color on the red carpet, these phonies. Oh, because you're wearing black is really going to do anything to change the situation for women? Really? And I used to get really irritated by that because they did literally no research when they say these things. Like, so back at the Golden Globes of that year, 2018, a lot of the actresses and actors wore all black. Now people go, oh, big deal for the men, they wear black anyway. Sure, fine, maybe they should have picked a different color. I thought it would have been hilarious if every single man had showed up to the Golden Globes in a bright green tux. But that's not what happened. They chose black, and people mocked them and said, that doesn't do anything. You know, wearing a certain color dress, that doesn't do shit. Yeah, that's right, dumbass. Then maybe look at what they actually do in their real lives to make a difference. For instance, that was the when the Time's Up movement began. And it was, you know, people were wearing the pins, they were wearing black to talk about Time's Up. Well, Time's Up was an actual organization that was started by women in Hollywood. And they started something called the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. And within like 3 months of starting, so from the Golden Globes to the Oscars, they raised $60 million? They raised $21 million in that short amount of time for the defense fund, which the defense fund was set up to provide legal support for women in all industries, not just Hollywood, all industries who were pursuing legal action against their harassers and abusers. And or if they were being sued, perhaps for defamation, this legal support could provide them defense, you know, because when you come out against someone who's in power above you, they can use the legal system because they maybe have the means to sue you just because you accuse them of something. And then you're bankrupted because, you know, you just said, hey, this guy touched me inappropriately and now your life is fucking ruined. Anyway, so this fund is supposed to help all these people. And in those 3 months, they raised $21 million. And this is from 20,000 separate donors in all 50 states, not just people from Hollywood. Americans all across the country were donating to this fund. Over 1,600 women reached out to the fund in that short time for legal support across all different industries, 60 different industries. These are real facts that you could look up if you wanted to, but no. It's more convenient to just mock celebrities for having a prom and wearing pretty dresses and saying they don't do anything when you don't do any fucking research. And that shit makes me mad. You know, look, Hollywood's not perfect. Obviously, we had some serious issues. And there's a lot of things that, you know, I mean, that year at the Oscars, Kobe Bryant won a fucking Oscar. I mean, the dude was a rapist. Now, look, I'm not getting in an argument about whether or not Kobe Bryant was actually a rapist, but the case was pretty credible and he settled out of court. So you do with that what you will. Anyway, so yeah, there was some messy times back then, but at least people were trying to fix it. And there were some people organizing and mobilizing, trying to, and not just to fix our own industry, but to help women in other industries. I thought that was commendable. And for people to ignore that is intentional. And it means, you know, if they're sitting there on their couch going, these celebrities, they're doing nothing. That's a sure sign that whoever's saying that is the one doing nothing. And the reason they're doing nothing is because they don't actually care about the issue that we're talking about. They don't care about helping women. They don't care about whatever. You know, another great example. This one, oh man, this one just eats me up. There was so much, bullshit on the internet about this one. I think this was that same year, but earlier, maybe I think it might have been the Golden Globes. Connie Britton, star of Friday Night Lights, star of Nashville, and an absolute amazing woman, Connie Britton, was on the red carpet, and she wore a sweater that said on it, it was embroidered on it, and so I'm already like, oh, embroidery. Oh, I love it. Beautiful work. She had a sweater on it that said, poverty is sexist. Now, for the average Joe, you look at that and you go, what the fuck does that mean? Poverty is sexist. How can poverty be sexist? What does that even mean? Well, of course, why would you research it? You know, forget Googling it. Just react online. Just react on Twitter and get fucking pissed off. So people got all mad and they said, because then they find out that the sweater she wore cost $380. So Connie Britton wore a sweater that said poverty is sexist. These are the facts that people were reacting to, okay? I'm just laying these out first before I get to the real story. So what people were mad about is that Connie Britton wore a sweater that said poverty is sexist and it cost $380, and she wore it to the on the Golden Globes red carpet. I believe it was the Golden Globes. People were like, this is the perfect example of Hollywood elites preaching to us, and they're phonies and hypocrites, and they don't do shit. Why wouldn't you donate the $380, you rich fucking bitch? You know, like, just people just going fucking nuts. They're like, this is exactly what we're talking about. Proof that celebrity women are cunts. Like, this is like, they're just going off on it. Well, I was like, I thought, I heard it, and I was like, what is Connie doing? Did she fuck up here? And what is poverty is sex? Because then the other thing was, oh, is it sexist? Do we have to make poverty about gender now, too? Actually, statistically speaking, more of the homeless population are men. Homelessness is about men in America. What about our homeless vets? Why do you hate America? You know, and this turns into this whole fucking thing. And I heard all those things. I read those things and I was like, oh, well, let's find out more about what this is. So I Google it. And of course, there's way more to this story. First of all, poverty is sexist in the shirt was meant to highlight, and this is what Connie Britton talked about on the red carpet, because why bother actually listening to what she said on the red carpet about the shirt? Let's just react to a photo and a factoid that it cost $380. The shirt was meant to promote and highlight the One campaign, which is about global poverty, which, and even in America, it's a different, more complicated story than just how many of the homeless population are men versus women. But globally, poverty disproportionately affects women, extreme poverty especially. We're talking about the really underdeveloped nations, very poor countries across the world, where women are disproportionately affected by poverty. That it's harder for them to get out of poverty than it is for men in many parts of the world. And that's what this campaign was highlighting. So she wasn't saying that poverty in America is sexist. It was, and honestly, I appreciate a provocative statement like that because it gets people asking. They go, well, what does that mean? Of course, intelligent people ask. Dumb people look at it and just react without finding out any of the information. Second off, the sweater was designed by a designer, okay, a fashion designer named Lingua Franca. It wasn't made by threadless.com. You know, it wasn't made by a dumb, cheap t-shirt factory and Connie Britton had it printed out on her printer and ironed it on that day. It was made by a fashion designer. And unfortunately, fashion designers create clothes that are really expensive. And part of the reason that they're really expensive, let's think about it. Maybe it's because the shirt wasn't created in a factory in a third world country and it was made by hand in America or something. You know, look, I don't know exactly where the shirt was made and all those details. And if it was like, you know, ethically sourced and all that. I'm sure it probably was, given the cause that it was for. But also $100 of each shirt that you buy would go to an organization. I believe it was called FedCam or something like that, which was an organization that helped women in poverty. I mean, like, I don't understand, like, what Connie Britton did. How is that wrong? Also, people are like saying she's doing nothing. And it's like, how do you know that? Do you look at her tax returns? Do you know how much money Connie Britton donates to charity? It's probably a fuck ton of money. Like, and this is the thing with this. You know, when people, they would always get mad and they would say, what about our homeless vets? We can't send aid to foreign countries. We've got homeless vets. They always say homeless vets. You know what? I had spent my entire life in America One working with the homeless from when my mom did it up to the end of America One. I worked with the homeless consistently in different cities, and I knew what the fuck I was talking about. And I can tell you, the people that were at home complaining, Hollywood doesn't give a shit about homelessness. We don't care about our own homeless. Yeah, you don't, because I never saw you down there at the soup kitchen volunteering. You know, I didn't see you voting for people who would, you know, provide more support to the poorest people in our country. You know, you're the type that would be like, I'm not paying for the lazy poor. Like, it's just a disconnect. There's this disconnect, and it drove me fucking crazy. But anyway, this stuff about Connie Britton, I'm like, people just get going off the fucking handle about something that they didn't do 1 second of research about. It just, that kind of stuff used to eat me the fuck up. And now I just let it eat me up now, remembering it. Thank God I don't really have to deal with that stuff anymore. And, oh, here's another thing, by the way. Do you know how much a gown, this is what Connie Britton said in response to all the criticism she got. And I'm not quoting verbatim here, but she said, what would you rather me do? Gowns for the red carpet cost like $5,000. So in a way, she spent way less money on her outfit. And she did it to highlight a cause that she was passionate about. I guarantee you that if you see a celebrity out in the world talking about a charity, they're donating money and time to that charity. Like, they're not, I mean, I just personally, and, you know, obviously I was a beloved public figure by many, many, many people, millions. But, like, if you saw me out there going, I really care about this particular organization, what kind of person goes, I love this organization, and then you don't donate it to it? I guess a lot of people do that. It's similar with the whole GoFundMe thing. I would see people retweeting a GoFundMe, and I would go, I wonder if they actually clicked through and actually made the donation. That was a rule I always had. Like, don't retweet a fundraiser unless you're actually going to also donate to it. Because even if you have a lot of followers, like, you know, you should be making a donation too. Don't be lazy. $10. $25, $7,000, whatever it is you have, donate it. I love donating money. In fact, I could easily have seen myself going in a downward spiral of like going from, I was a shopping addict at one point in my life. I don't think it would have been diagnosable shopping addict, but it maybe it would have been, because I actually did fuck up my life because of it. I didn't go into bankruptcy. I didn't fuck up my credit, but I did drum up a fuck ton of credit card debt at one point in my life, and it was causing me an enormous amount of stress. And part of that was because of a shopping habit. We'll call it habit. I could easily see myself going into a charity donation habit where it, because there's a thrill every time you donate to a good cause. And I usually would keep my donations anonymous because I didn't want to, like, make it about personal recognition. But still, even just the thrill of donating to any kind of GoFundMe, But my rule with GoFundMes was I had to at least know one person, like a one degree of removal, to donate to it. I wouldn't donate to a random GoFundMe unless it was in the news and it was verified, like, that this was real. Because there's a lot of bullshit on GoFundMe. I used to go on GoFundMe and just like look up certain words just to see what crazy ass campaigns people would have. You know, you want to feel very sad, search certain words on GoFundMe and see unsuccessful GoFundMe campaigns. Like, search Trump. Ooh, you will find, like, there's some crazy, some people are like, it's the, you know, let's send a bouquet of balloons to Donald Trump fund. Or there was really crazy ones right after the election. Like, I've got an idea. Let's all send, nothing illegal, but, you know, it was along the lines of, let's all send a bag of shit to Donald Trump. Although you can't do that. Anyway, I am on I'm just saying, you want to see some sad shit, you want to feel really sad, sing the song Remember Me from Coco, or do a search of certain words. Now, don't do, like, cancer, because that shit will be way too sad, but, like, search, like, pop culture words, like Trump, Hillary Clinton, Africa. Like, I mean, you, and I say Africa because there's always people who are like, fund my trip to Africa. I'm gonna go to Africa and go on a safari, but then I'm gonna work at an orphanage, and just like, this is my mission. God has called me to go to Africa. But I need like $7,000 to do it. Just like, oh no. Anyway, Depths of Sadness, check it out. I'm on a real tangent here. I don't know why I was talking about GoFundMe. I was just saying, if you're going to donate to charity, like, I just say, when people start pointing the finger and going, you're not doing anything. Like, a big thing was on social media was all like, why don't you get off social media and actually do something? And it's like, how do you know I'm not doing something? Why do you assume that? And whenever you ask someone and poke and go, what is it about my statement that made you think I'm doing nothing? They usually fold. They usually can't, you know, they're like, well, I'm just talking about people in general. And I'm like, no, but you phrased it you were accusing me. Anyway, we don't need to rehash that, all that shit. Thank God social media is gone. So yeah, those are my memories of that year at the Oscars. So the award season that year was very memorable. I knew people. There was a lot of social issues brought up. I thought it was hilarious that they brought back Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway to re-present the Best Picture Award, kind of give them a chance to redeem themselves, which I was like, oh, they're going to bring back them. They wouldn't let Janet Jackson go back to the Super Bowl, but yet they're going to let these two old people come back after fucking it. I mean, I guess it would be different, but I don't know. Anyway, you know, of course, nowadays, we don't really have the Academy Awards anymore because it seems pointless to give awards to movies that generally suck. And the reason they suck is because we put a temporary stop to the regular Hollywood movie industry. And now there's a DBZ known as Hollywood DBZ, and they make movies. Yes, we'd still have movies. You can go to Drone Mall and you can order a movie, you can download it and watch it. But they made a rule that just for the during America 2, there would be a control of the movie industry, and that the only movies that can be created are movies that don't offend anyone. And the result of that is that there's almost no movies. And the movies that do come out are like 90 minutes of watching like a puppy play with a stick. and there's not a whole lot of story or challenge or depth of character. I mean, even some, we were finding even the puppy movies were starting to become too controversial, because, like, if the puppy was, you know, if the puppy, you know, tore up something, what was the something it tore up in the movie? You know, there was a movie that they put out where a puppy tore up accidentally like a little bit of an American flag, and people just went berserk. You know, they were like, we can't, because, you know, everybody is in all their DBZs and they're becoming more and more isolated. And so when they download a movie off of Drone Mall, they actually brought back Blockbuster. And it's called Virtual Blockbuster, and they put it in Drone Mall, and you can download movies, and it's kind of nostalgic that way. But yeah, the movies, these are the only movies available to everybody. So it's sort of a throwback to, like, back in the day when there were only three networks, and there was, like, you know, only a few movies came out every year, and everybody saw the same stuff, you know. In one way, it united everyone. We all had the same point of reference. But of course, in America too, it's a whole different story, in that these movies have become so vanilla and so boring to the point where to offend no one. To offend no one on the right or the left, imagine what you have to do to achieve that. Now, there used to be these phrases in comedy that people go, well, if you're not offending someone, you're not doing a very good job of it, you know? And it would be like, okay, well, I don't 100% agree with that. But when we did reach a point where even a movie with a puppy, you know, where did the puppy pee? Did he pee on native land that was stolen land? Did the puppy... was the puppy, you know, pretending to be a police officer? Well, police are brutal. We don't want to see a puppy in a police officer uniform. That's offensive to me. Or did the puppy show his teeth too much? You know, that scared me. You know, would the puppy bite me? You know, everybody had some reason for being offended by these puppy movies. And now we're, you know, it seems like they put out a trailer. There's going to be a new movie and it's just a gerbil this time, and it's just a gerbil hanging out in a cage, which people are definitely going to be offended by that. There is no way that one's going to make it, because gerbils deserve to be free. How dare you put them in a cage? You know, there's some people who think there should be no pets at all, and though I don't 100% agree with it, I personally don't have any pets, and I didn't really have any pets in America. When I had a pet when I was a child, a dog named Molly, who, looking back, I don't think we treated Molly as well as we should have. My family was in a way broken, and we didn't know how to handle a dog. And we kept the dog alive, and we loved her very much, but she was fucked up when we got her. I mean, she was a real fucked up dog. She was very scared of us, very skittish. So it was hard to train her to be, like, you know, one of us. But anyway, Molly, if you're hearing this somehow, I wanted to say I'm sorry that we left you in the laundry room too long at times. We should have let you out and play more. But when we let you outside, you would just go running and never come back. And we would have to ride around the neighborhood searching for you. And then when you saw us, you'd be like, you'd defiantly go bark at us and be like, I'm not fucking coming back, you animals. And we're like, no, you're the animal. You need us to survive. Molly, I don't know what we did wrong, or if you were just too far gone by the time we got you, but you were a mangy mutt. And that is me quoting my dad. He called you a mangy mutt, and that would make me very sad. But now, as an adult looking back, she really was a mangy mutt. She was a fucking mess of a dog. She didn't do any tricks. She would be very volatile and sometimes snap at you if you touched her in the wrong place. I mean, she was severely abused before we got her, so we did the best we could. And also, my family just, we didn't have the skills. I don't think we knew what to do with this dog. Anyway, poor Molly. We loved you so much. Anyway, nowadays I don't have any official pets, but I do have, you know, animals that are part of my life that I'm the caretaker of. I wouldn't call them a pet. I would call them, they share my land with me, even my chickens. You know, they're part of the loner zone that I'm in, and I am here to protect them from any potential intruders and to protect them from me and my own selfish ways. Anyway, hopefully there'll be a good movie on Drone Mall soon. Be great to see some human characters and not a baby animal of some kind. I'd love to see some dialogue. And anyway, well, remember me. I can't even do it. I can't get through that song. Oh my God. The ultimate would be Molly singing Remember Me to me. So I'm imagining Molly singing, my dog Molly from heaven, going, wah, 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 wah. I can't even do that without crying. Oh, man. Okay. Good night, Molly.